Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Webb, and alongside me, as always, is my best friend, my buddy, the guy who I cannot do life with. If you could just sew us together, we'd probably be just one unified force. That is Mr. Spencer Williams.
Well, that's very nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, not at all indicative of the movie we just watched. And speaking of indicative of the movie we just watched, also with us is managing intern manager, Amy.
Yes, I am here. Thank you.
Yes, she is here.
I am
on
here.
The heels here, of I'm her here. Previous intern files episode, mind you, last week.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Not going to say anything about it. Okay, cool.
No, yeah.
Anyway, we have a great show in store for you today as we're going to be taking a look at the recently dropped movie by Curry Barker, and that is Obsession. As we dive into that, stick around and we got a lot of thoughts and opinions. But before we do, Spencer, why don't you give us some opening credits?
Tune in to brand new episodes each and every week.
We try every week.
It's working on it.
We're on all your favorite streaming platforms and on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers, on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmosity101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
Hey, that's right. We got a website. If you head on over to our website at filmlosophers.podcast.com, sorry, I got a hiccup. We allegedly got over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.podcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune in to your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a like or a subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
Oh, and don't forget, if you get a chance, check out last week's episode, The Intern Files, tape number 4. I don't know if Amy is going to speak on that at all, or she's just oblivious.
Nope, the moment's passed.
All right, we'll give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. We are excited to talk about this movie. As you know, it's not very often where all three of us kind of come to a general consensus about a film, especially a horror film, mind you. But before we do, I got a surprise for you guys with a new segment.
It's got a tube.
Yes, that is right.
Jam.
I am bringing to you the composium, if you will, of all that is knowledgeable and trollish, the entire arena, if you will, that houses every keyboard knight, if you will. That is the platform Reddit. Reddit actually has some substantial movie fans on there, and one of the things that I always really appreciate about it is some of the off-the-wall and unique questions that they pose on there. It's definitely one of those things where it's like you go and you check it out and you're like, okay, that's a dumb question, but hey, you know what? More to your heart's desire, whatever. Like, if I were to watch this movie and I put this movie on in the background, would I be able to understand both plots? It's like things like that. But at the same time, there's actually a couple of really fun ones that come through. And so I'm going to be posing to you guys every time we do this segment, I'm going to pose to you a Reddit question that has been posted on the platform. And I want to get your guys' thoughts and opinions. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yes.
We'll make an effort.
All right. So your Reddit movie question for today. What is a movie that you think has a flawless first 30 minutes, but falls apart completely by the end? I think that's a really interesting, and I think kind of what spawned, if you will, or birthed this whole segment was not only the engagement that this post got on Reddit, because it's definitely filled with smart people and not so smart people, people who are, you know, studied in movies and film and whatnot. And then you have the Joe Schmoes who like watching, you know, old school for the 50th time and stuff like that. So I think it's a really great question, though, because I think a lot of people don't realize how, even though a movie kind of front loads the best parts of it, it can easily fall apart in that like other three quarters of the movie. So Ames, do you have a thought? And mind you, one thing I do want to note, controversial opinions are welcome.
Ooh.
So I would welcome any thoughts, because honestly, I think controversial opinions kind of make for the best conversation. I mean, for God's sakes, we have a hoot every time we talk about Spencer's hatred for the English language, you know, and so it's
stupid.
It's exactly. No. And we could do a whole episode just on that alone. But the fact is, I would rather you have a more unfiltered answer than one you think as a filmlosopher you would have to provide.
Okay. Wait, do I only get one?
Preferably. Just because I'd rather have the one, so that gives us more time to kind of unpack why.
Okay. Then I'll go with the, because this was hard for me in being like, what's the first 30, like the first 30 minutes. And then I started trying to think about movies that I really liked the concept and it initially got me. And then I watched and I was like, oh no, you dropped the ball. And one I had really been excited about was it Sucker Punch, the one with the all females?
That is like a really good choice.
Because I think
that's Snyder, isn't it?
It might be.
It has the vibe of him.
It has a Snyder vibe.
It has the look of it,
too. But it was also during that pocket where we had like everybody was stylizing fighting, and I was also on
Zack Snyder.
Yeah, and I was on a Sky Captain in the World of Tomorrow, because I was like, oh, maybe a little bit like I was in my my Miller phase for like Sin City and its comic books and doing all of that. And I saw the trailers for Sucker Punch and I was really excited. I was like, heck yes, all ladies fighting. It looks stylized, looks great. It kind of lures you in. And then it's just a whole bunch of fight sequences, and not fun fight sequences, not where it's like spaced out and not everything is in slow-mo. And yeah, I have literally wiped a good chunk of that movie out of, I have SpongeBob in the filing cabinet a good chunk of this movie, because I was like, oh yeah, Sucker Punch. And then I'm like, wait, no,
it's that last part of that movie.
I can't. And it's so ridiculous, because I had such high hopes for it. So yeah, sorry, Zach.
Real quick, without any explanation, because I don't want to know in depth, what would have been your second choice? Oh, yeah, to think about it. I thought you just had one off the top of your head.
Because I put one in there and then I put the other one down. We reviewed it and it was fun.
I didn't need an explanation. I just don't want the movie. Y2K. You got 3 seconds. 3, 2.
Y2K.
Wow. That is okay. That's interesting, because
thinking back on it. And
Okay, Spencer,
watch,
your turn.
There's a reason.
Okay, so this is actually a really hard question for me, because I tend to either remember good movies or bad movies, and things that are disappointing like that like get deleted, because I'm like, you disappointed me once and never again.
You no longer have hold in this mind of mine.
So this one actually caused me to really wreck my brain. The only thing I could think of was the movie Hancock, where at least it, like the first half of it felt like a completely different movie than the second half of it.
Holy crud, you're so right.
Like,
oh my gosh.
I haven't seen it since like it came out, because I was that mad about it. But like, I feel like it's one of those things that should have been two separate movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Even just thinking about it now, I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. It was superheroes struggling and Will Smith, and it was good. And then
the second half was like, there's this other half of you and something, something, something.
And something
Charlize Theron and blah, blah, blah.
And you need to go work with
Jason
her.
Jason Bateman's struggling with this and blah, blah, blah.
And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It made no sense. It definitely was like a curveball for that particular genre and for that time frame of movie.
Yeah.
Like, Will Smith was at his peak at that point. Like, this was absolute pinnacle Will Smith. Anything he would have put himself into would have made buttloads of money.
Yes.
And this is definitely a pivot from a lot of that. This had to have been around the same time he did like I Am Legend and all that.
Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah. It was pretty close to that.
Real quick, without any explanation, what was your second choice?
I didn't have a second.
Okay. You didn't have
a second. I was really reaching for that
okay,
one.
Okay. Okay. I have a primary choice and then I have a secondary choice that I was, they literally go back and forth. I'm honestly going to have to say, I had to write it down. Oh.
Oh, what, you just didn't remember it off the top of your head?
No, because they were just both, they're both completely separate movies, not even on the same genre.
Okay.
But they both, like, killed the whole vibe of the movie. My first choice was Knowing, which was a god-awful movie with Nicolas Cage and Jessica Biel.
Where he just knows everything.
Where he just knows.
And then does the movie undo itself at the end or something
knows,
like that?
He knows up to 10 seconds of what's going to happen in the future. But when he's around Jessica Biel, he knows infinitely more. And so let me give you let me just give you a quick synopsis. Amy's making this
have
weird.
Have you never seen this movie?
No, oh. And I feel absolved.
No. Here's the kind of quickness of this movie. He's this weird guy who shows up at this diner every day to try to get her attention, and you don't realize it until like 2 minutes in that he actually loops time, like he actually is able to see 10 seconds ahead, and he tries all these different ways to try to get her attention. Finally gets her attention by like hurting himself or something, and they end up, I guess, just being a thing, him and Jessica Biel. And
Justin Timberlake has things to say about that.
And they ultimately, like, there's ultimately this plot of like someone has stolen a nuclear weapon and they're gonna blow it up or whatever. And so he realizes that because he has this ability to see 10 seconds when he's around Jessica Biel, the time is exponentially lengthened. And so it gets to the point to where the police find out he has this ability. Jessica Biel has him help out. They ultimately aren't able to figure out where the nuke is. The nuke explodes. He wakes up in the hotel that they had just gone to the day after they met. And everything that had happened in the movie is erased.
Yeah.
It backtracked like days. And he's like, you know what? I just got to go and figure this out. And he leaves her. She goes to Mexico or somewhere to teach English or South America. And that's how the movie
that's
ends.
That's a hard fumble.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's your other one?
Boy in Striped Pajamas.
Oh, my Lanta.
I just did not. If ever there was a movie that you're like, okay, this is interesting, and then just like totally turn you off from wanting to see the rest of the movie, it was this one. Mind you, I have no issue with
the book
movies about the Holocaust. Because of the fact that it's part of history. There are certain aspects, obviously. But when it goes to the degree where they're unaliving children explicitly in the whole, the way the ending goes. You haven't seen The Boy in the Striped Pajamas, have
no,
you, Spencer?
Don't.
And you know I have a problem with Grave of the Fireflies, which is vaguely similar.
Yeah, this is bad.
This is worse.
And I don't really want. It's one of those movies where it's like it's the experience movie. Like
absolutely
like
not.
You know, we're no. I mean by experience, like it's the movie that you're like, "Oh, did you like you said Grave of the Fireflies?"
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ever planning to see it again.
No, I'm not either.
But you remember the time when you first saw it, right?
You're traumatized.
Yes, it was awful.
So I'm saying that's the experience. Those are the types of movies.
I don't want that experience.
I'm not saying it's an experience you want. Not every experience is what you want. I'm sorry. Everybody has different experiences. It doesn't mean that they're all wanted. They just end up happening. It's the course of life. It's literally how chaos works.
Okay, Carl.
Just saying. Anyway, that... You guys...
Oh my gosh.
What?
No, just... The Boy in the Striped Pajamas is the one where you're like, and it just turns. We're like, this doesn't, the book ends the same way.
I know. I didn't read the book. Did you?
Yeah. So I didn't watch the movie. That was mad.
Well, anyway, you know, this is Reddit.
Yeah. Yeah. This
is our first endeavor into this. And mind you, this won't be our last. We're just really trying things out with Reddit movie questions. And it'll be fun to kind of see how things go in the near future as
this was such an uplifting conversation.
I know, right? And we're totally going to go into a banger of a movie review as we transition over into the movie review of the evening. And that is our take on Curry Barker's most recent feature, I believe this is his feature film debut,
theatrical film debut,
with the recently dropped Obsession. This is a movie that honestly took some convincing for intern Amy.
Managing intern Amy
to actually want to see. And then we finally were able to convince her because she did use her one veto already for the year. And so
I was very glad. There's also other ones that I have given permission to the other interns to step in. Mm-hmm. And I've said, you do this one because they know where I sit.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you have a veto, though.
No.
So if they're not available, you will have to step in.
They will be available.
So this movie obviously has been on our radar for some time. And honestly, it's been kind of a coin flip as far as based on marketing and so forth, because there hasn't been really a lot of it. But we got a chance to check it out. The film's been out for already about 2 weeks in theaters. Mm-hmm. So it's been out for a little bit. No, a week. Because it came out not this week, but the week before.
I believe so.
Right.
2 weeks.
No, the Friday before last. So 1 week.
Oh.
So it's been out for a full week, I believe, at least.
Bare Naked Ladies, this got it. It's been 1 week.
Before we go any further, Spencer, why don't you read us that official synopsis goodness?
After breaking the mysterious One Wish Willow to win his crush's heart, a hopeless romantic finds himself getting exactly what he asks for, but soon discovers that some desires come with at a dark, sinister price.
Directed and written by Curry Barker, it stars Michael Johnston, Indy Navarrete, her first leading role, Cooper Tomlinson, Megan Lawless, and Andy Richter. A couple key pieces about the film. The entire movie was actually shot in only 20 days for $750,000 and was picked up by Focus Features for $15 million after a bidding war that had distributors like A24 and Neon vying for it. Blumhouse is the one who ended up with it, because it doesn't say which is the one that ended up with
So distribution rights went to Focus Features, but Blumhouse also joined in earlier before that.
Yeah, because I do recall seeing the Blumhouse logo in the So, yeah. So, obviously, you know, this might be one of the more recent success stories when it comes to, you know, movies getting picked up, and especially feature films, like short film creators and YouTube content creators becoming more and more of the individuals who are coming forward as potential filmmakers, great filmmakers. Another key piece of information, Obsession marks the debut as a feature film composer for composer Rock Burrell. His creative partnership with Barker grew out of a mutual music project in Los Angeles, and the two developed the atmospheric synth-driven score in close collaboration throughout production. Ames, here, when you're touching the notes and you're editing things, you make it available. You make it seen on everyone else's.
I'm not touching anything.
You literally just highlighted everything.
What? No, I didn't.
Spencer.
I was opening something else. So
it's not me.
Well, somebody. Okay.
I'm getting harassed and I highlight nothing. Who's this, the pink thing right there? Spencer, are you the pink one?
Probably. Both of you guys. I don't know why you guys are editing.
What are you talking about?
That's I'm not editing.
Green is I can Eddie. I can literally see your cursor move all over.
That's yours.
That's you.
No, mine's up by the very top.
Now it is. I just saw you move it.
Because
you're not slick. It's like talking to a 4-year-old saying, "Don't touch that," and they're like, "I'm not touching anything." As they reach their hand out.
Do you know what?
The music store featured in the film as this is the same store that was used in Wayne's World. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I didn't know that. It's not really mentioned in the store, but cool, or in the movie.
Yep.
But. And last but not least, the One Wish Willow helpline character we hear in the trailer as well as the film is voiced by director Curry Barker. Mm-hmm. That is a very, like, he's a very bro sounding guy in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, like we said, we got a chance to see this film and we are absolutely excited to talk about it. But before we do that, we do want to let you know that with this conversation comes a little bit of information. So, spoiler warning.
Spoilers.
You have been warned. Let's talk expectations. I want to talk about actually what you guys had in mind coming into this movie. Because like I mentioned, the marketing was very like skim. Like it was very thin. Like there wasn't a lot of information.
Shoestring
budget.
Okay. What? Well,
the marketing was shoestring.
Well, see, the thing about the marketing is that there's a trailer for this movie. I've never seen it.
You've like, never seen the trailer?
No, I only saw the teaser because like yeah. I went onto like YouTube and it's like, oh, here's the trailer. And I'm like, it came out months ago. I'm like, I've never seen this. Why was this never in theaters?
Wait, did it extend more than just him in the car with
yeah,
the
yeah.
car?
Yeah,
there was a. Then I've never seen the trailer.
Yeah, that was the thing.
Because I thought that was the trailer and that was enough to sell me.
No, yeah. That was just the teaser. Like there's an actual trailer that has like a couple of the, it's very abbreviated clips of this other scenes that are in the movie.
Right.
That teaser got me though. That's fantastic.
Well, it's a great teaser. I mean, the building of that teaser was so inviting and interesting. And I think the biggest thing for me was like, you have such a vague conversation occurring on screen in this teaser that you're like, wait, what did he do? What happened? I mean, if we want to talk, okay, real quick, Disney, if you're listening, get out a pen and paper.
Yeah.
This is how you build a proper teaser trailer.
Yeah.
Because honestly, it didn't give anything away.
Nothing.
It didn't give any part of the premise. It didn't even give any name that was in the movie. All it gave you was the premise that somebody may love somebody outside of the real reasons of why you should love somebody.
Yeah.
And they're talking. Yeah. And they're talking to a hotline about it.
Yes. Which had so many other questions tied into that. And I was like, this is your pitch. This is how you get everybody hooked.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that I didn't see the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I feel like more people should do this because like this was wildly more engaging.
Yeah.
Than I feel like any recent trailer I've seen.
Yes.
100%. I agree. And so talking about expectations, Spencer, outside of just only seeing that, did you have any other expectations for this movie?
No, it's like the teaser seemed like it was like magical nonsense. And I'm like, okay, like I'm on board for whatever this is.
Magical nonsense. Eh?
Because you mentioned one wish and I'm like, wish? What? Oh, that sounds bad. You messed up.
Yeah. This is like a horror version of like Pinocchio or something. Which I just realized we all saw the movie together.
Yes,
right?
We did.
Okay. So
you just forgot because you forgot.
It's been a long week, okay? I am still trying to come off
pause.
Of just a crazy week. Yeah. So you didn't really have any other expectations other than just...
No, I was actually really excited though.
Oh, okay. What based off of the teaser?
Yeah, just based on the teaser. Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, let's see this.
What about you, Ames?
So everyone knows that I don't like horror movies.
I'm going to be honest, I was surprised you showed up.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So here was
that's not
thing.
Really a good thing, but sure, you could take it as such.
I will take it as a badge of honor that I surprised you. Really, when it came
as
to this...
As a badge of honor.
Yeah, I'd like to surprise people. Okay. So in terms of this movie for expectations, I saw the trailer and I was like, I was so intrigued that I was like, I don't know how this is going to end because even the way, and mind you, I kept seeing the teaser trailer so many times.
The teaser trailer?
The teaser trailer. I need to enunciate. I've been having that problem all day. Yeah. So
Mumbles McGinty over here is like, she's got a future career in mumble rap. Yeah.
I'm working on it. I don't have, it is apparently right now. It really is.
Just don't ask her to say that.
Mumble rap?
No, lucrative.
Lucrative. Ha ha. But really when it came to this film, my intrigue outweighed my apprehension, which is something that, especially when it comes to horror movies or the genre, it's a lot harder for me to get behind a trailer where it's like blood, murder, blood, murder,
blood, murder,
jump scare, really loud sound. this was so well done, as it literally was just like, I'm sorry, what? Wait, what's
going to happen? The teaser you're talking about.
It felt like a 2-sentence horror story.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a teaser. And that made it so that I wanted to show up. Mm. And I did.
Yeah, for once. I think the biggest thing for me is obviously the teaser trailer, just such a unique premise just to present to viewers who have no idea what's happening. And then you take that premise and you create a vibe to it. Like even the way the title card came up, the way the word obsession kind of rolled into it, and it had like that weird VHS fuzz around it. I was just really intrigued with, you know, how the visuals of this movie were looking right from the get-go. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, like after when I first saw the teaser trailer, the way it was framed, I half expected something to come through that window. Like watching and you're like, you're seeing that slow push in and you're like, oh my God, something's going to come
and hit the window and break the glass and kill him. Like you are fully expecting it.
Yeah. You're tense, but for the wrong reason. Like you're not tense because of the conversation that's happening, even though the conversation that's happening is kind of, you know, disturbing. You're tense because you're focused on maybe somebody's going to come and like break through that window and do something harmful to this person. And then it's usually like once you're kind of in that mode of like, oh, I guess not. And then you start listening to the conversation and it's like, wait, what did this guy do? And it kind of sets the tone for like the subversion of your expectations for what this movie is going to be about, which I think is absolutely just a genius move by the filmmaker. And I honestly, I wanted to see if the whole film was going to live up to the hype that this small teaser provided.
Mm-hmm.
So I do recall I did unfortunately see the trailer in full like maybe a week or two before we went to go see this movie.
Oh.
And it was interesting. It didn't really still give a lot of way, but it was because it was very abbreviated on scenes, but you still got a sense, and so you're like, okay, all right, you know. But nevertheless, it didn't deter me from wanting to see the movie in full at all. So speaking of the movie, we all got a chance to see it, as I stated earlier, and we all watched it. And so I want to know first impressions right outside the gate. Let's start with Amy.
Holy crud, this was insane, and it ended on a perfect note. This is awesome. Ha. Huh.
Okay.
Yeah. I can talk about that at length later. Hey! Right.
Spencer.
You know, normally when I watch movies, like, you know, I'm taking note of different things, mm-hmm. like, you know, the soundtrack and like, you know, how people are acting and stuff. And that was true until like, you know, I don't know, halfway through. And then I just got sucked into a world where a horrific thing was happening in front of me and there was no way to stop it. Like,
yeah,
I love this movie. I hate this movie. Like I feel like that's the best way for me to like sum up my feelings about it.
Yeah. First impressions right outside the gate. This is, Clingy Partner 101. this is cause like this movie took the opportunity to have fun with the stereotype of those partners or those people. And it's not just women. I'm not gonna kind of silo this whole persona. It is any person who has chosen to obsess over anybody. This takes that premise and amps it up to 11,000. And I loved it. It was such a wild ride. I didn't miss out on any opportunity to just engage in every part of each scene, because the way this movie's constructed, it is absolutely a masterclass in how to frame as well. And we'll talk about that as we get deeper into the films, as well as our thoughts on all the cast and characters right after these messages. And we're back. So obviously we gave our first impressions already, and I think it doesn't need to really be stated, but the fact is that I think we had a good time with this movie. So let's talk about some of the performers. Now, I know that there's quite a few, but I do believe that the Ames, why are you sending things?
Well, it's a pretty tight list of actors. Like, it's literally the people that are named in the top.
Yes. But you're also sending stuff in the text group. So
I'm supporting just in case someone or anybody listening would like to buy their own One Wish Willow, because apparently not only is there a website where you can buy them.
There's also a phone number.
And there's also a phone number. So if you are really feeling the vibe, wait for a restock. Do not give in to the eBay resellers and get yourself a One Wish Willow.
One fun fact I know about this One Wish Willow design is it was actually made by the director's mother.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I actually watched an interview where he was talking about a few things.
Okay, that's really cool.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about the cast of characters in this particular movie, starting with obviously Michael Johnston, who plays the main character. Whose name is Bear. Obviously, great role. It's a very interesting dichotomy because the movie starts with him being the obsessor and then it kind of pivots midway through to her being the obsessor, as you've obviously seen in the trailers and so forth. I think he did a really good job. I don't think I've really seen him in anything else prior to.
Agreed.
But I do have to say his performance really did stand out as, you know, someone who is struggling to comprehend exactly what is happening in his own life. And it definitely gave us moments for opportunity to see that full range from the obsessed and love struck to the at peace and happy with somebody, to the confusion, to the fear, to the dread, to the outright just mortified kind of mentality. It was great. And I think he really did a great job conveying that. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah. For Michael Johnston, which this open, he flopped, which mind you, going in, we really want you to have your own opinions. But the way his character starts out this film is so cringe-inducing on so many levels that I remember I just looked over at Spencer and you had your hand over your mouth like, no, no. And then when everything starts gearing up, suddenly you see really like he has a weird little arc, but the arc is so necessary. And he does this with like, he has a wet puppy dog look the entire time. And not going to lie, it makes you kind of want to punch him in the face. Sorry. Good job, Michael.
I mean, that's
okay, part of it is just his face.
Yeah.
No. I really think part of it is the way that they styled his hair. Because I was looking at other pictures of him and I'm like, oh, you're not that bad, my guy. But really, his arc that takes into this movie, it takes so much courage. I don't say courage, but the way that he acted this part and the inevitable resolve was very balanced. Like, not only in the way it was approached, but in the sincerity that it was played out, which is really cool and really creepy.
Yeah. Opposite of him, obviously, is Indy Navarrete.
Holy crap, Indy. Holy freaking crap.
I don't think it really needs to be stated, but we'll state it otherwise. This woman did a phenomenal job.
Oh my gosh.
With a lot brilliant. Of what, yeah, with a lot of the work that she put in, the physical acting that she did with some of her facial contortions, the way she created like creepy smiles that she held for at least a couple minutes in a scene. She absolutely nailed it.
This woman stressed me out
for
like the entire runtime, but it was absolutely fantastic the way she could just walk into a room, say nothing, and then you're already like, oh no, something is about to go down. And like you can just even see it on her face, like, well, like she's like fine and it's fine, and then all of a sudden it's not, and something is coming and it's going to be bad.
Yeah,
like she played this like pitch perfect. I'm super impressed with her.
Yeah, and the fact that this is her first starring, like her first leading role. She's been in other films, but this is her first leading role. Really kind of shows you the scope of what she's capable of, and how much trust they put in her to be able to embody this particular character of Nikki.
So I mentioned I was watching some interviews.
Yeah.
And she was in one of them. And yeah, she was talking about like how like she would specifically like come up with a plan of what like she was going to do for like a scene, like especially like the ones where like it's just her and the Barry character, the Barry character. Like she very specifically wouldn't show the actor what she was going to do beforehand.
Yes.
So like it was more genuine reactions of like,
Wow.
Yes.
That I
corner,
think.
Corner. Yeah. The corner sequence. If she didn't tell him anything. Oh my Lord. That one was so nuts.
Yeah. I feel like if that's the case, and it makes a lot more sense for some of those scenes that he had where he looked genuinely like petrified at whatever she was doing. And mind you, again, there's a lot of physicality that is in this role that honestly, most like higher level, higher tiered actors or actresses would have probably struggled with. And she did it with ease and poise, and especially with the makeup of this particular character's like persona, you know, and what, if you've seen the movie, what she's dealing with during the course of it, the dichotomy that she has to kind of bounce back and forth with really shines through, and you know there's a sense of like struggle that she's facing, and she does it really well.
Yeah, that's really the impressive part of like you really see like the two sides of the coin that's like going on throughout this whole movie, because like when she has like a look of shock, like you feel it's like she's like, what the hell's going on right now?
Yeah. Yeah. Did you have anything else to add, Ames?
No, I mean, really, when it comes down to it, she pivots with such intensity and ferocity, and everything, you are balancing on this knife's edge constantly. And even at the beginning, when he makes the wish and the pivot that she is actively doing while you're there, it creates this unease where you almost, even though you saw him make the wish, you're almost not too certain that one, it worked. And if it did, are you seeing the same thing as Bear is seeing? And she is like, it's so subtle.
Yeah.
But it's just enough creepy. And then it just literally, it leaps. She leaps over every scene that she's in. The going out to dinner, the party, the like, the him going to work, like all of the things. It is a culmination where the impact of her in our theater, there was uncomfortable laughter, and then there was laughter, but it was because she did such an amazing job that you're like, holy crap. I you want to, like, we'll talk about it with the story, but she is, I have no doubt that her agent is getting their door like just straight up annihilated, or their phone is being blown up with everybody. It's like, so I saw Indy, we'd love to get her on a project. Like, I see nothing but more great things for her from the future.
Yeah. Without a doubt. I truly feel like with the performance she did here, she's going to absolutely skyrocket into notoriety for her flexibility and feasibility for these kinds of roles.
And the sincerity that's in there, too. Like, there's no question about it.
No, without a doubt.
Also, that she did tell him is amazing. Like, I'm like, yep, let's go.
Was there any other people you guys just wanted to highlight?
I really liked, and again, this is a really, really small cast. I really liked Megan Lawless, who plays Sarah. Mm. There's literally, the cast is a group of the four. They're out of high school. What are they? They're like 20-ish?
Yeah, 20-ish.
Well, yeah, they're a couple years out of high school, like at least 2-3 years.
But it's a... Sarah, Megan Lawless, she kind of plays that she's the friend, but she's the cool kind of friend. They're all trying to kind of get out of this town. And she's very, when it comes to the other women that you see within the scope of this entire town or even this movie, she may look alt, but that she looks alt, but she is the most level-headed.
Yeah.
And in juxtaposition, when you first meet Indy's character, Nikki, they seem like they're, you know,
thick as thieves.
And they match. Like, they're on the same vibe. And then later on, when we're continuing to meet Sarah and seeing the spiral of Nikki, you're like, good job, Megan. Keep the course. Also, her dad is Andy Richter in this, which is even funnier.
In the movie, yeah.
In the movie. Not in real life, and she's not related to Lucy Lawless. I had to check. I had questions.
I mean, there's not too many people named Lawless.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very unique name. So I totally get you guys on that. Spencer, was anybody else you wanted to highlight or?
No, just same shout out to Andy Richter.
Well, then do we shout out the last guy that's in there?
Oh, Cooper Tomlinson.
Yeah, who is actually the other half of Curry Barker's like comedy troupe.
Yeah.
His little bits, and especially that one right at the end, I was like, yay, wait, oh. Like, he did good, but again, he was, because the focus and the story is so heavily pivoted with Bear and Nikki, he's there, and he supports well, but we don't get enough time with him where we're like, oh, I have a deep and abiding connection with you.
And I think he actually brings a lot to the table to kind of balance out that friend group. The guy who is a little bit more confident. He's a little bit more in touch with what's going on in the group. And the guy who's just concerned to a fault, concerned about, you know, the well-being of the friend group that he,
100%.
That he, you know, he appreciates. I do think that knowing now that you said he's a part of an improv group.
So Curry Barker is actually, he met Colin, and I was like, that is not this guy's name.
Cooper.
He met Cooper. He moved out to LA to go to film school, and he met Cooper, and they decided to join up and start making YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. And so their YouTube channel is called That's a Bad Idea, and it's where a lot of Curry Barker's short films and his first feature that they did actually lives. So they're both actors, but it's been really kind of nice to see them. And mind you, Spencer and I watched a short film on there, but I haven't had the opportunity to like watch the shorts to see like the comedy aspect of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have no doubt that Cooper can carry that, can carry that after what happens in this film with his character.
Yeah. Kind of moving towards the story. This is a very unique tale. It moves fairly quick, I think, is the one thing that I do have to say, much like the nature of the relationship in this movie. The actual movie itself, the storyline, kind of moves pretty quick, where honestly, the inciting incident of the making the wish all occurs within probably the first 15 to 20 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
That whole just what you already know as part of the premise from the trailer happens in the first 15, 20 minutes of the movie. How long is the movie entirely?
1 hour, 48 minutes.
So the rest moves. of the hour and 20 minutes is just full chaos. And you have to like appreciate the intentional like steps that Curry Barker uses to get from that initial inciting moment and then through the minefield of navigating a relationship with someone so obsessed with you that the wish is quite literally, I wish that this person loved me more than any other person in the world.
Yeah, more than anything.
More than any other human in the world or person. Either way, anything in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because it takes for it, it causes the suspension of disbelief in the film by not really setting the parameters for whatever this thing is.
100%.
And so it acts as kind of like your MacGuffin, if you will, or this just thing that instigates all the chaos for the rest of the film. Because it's important at the beginning and then it becomes important at the end. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, the most honest and without spoiling anything, the most direct way to say it. And it's great use of a MacGuffin, honestly. it's actually really fun, and nothing really is explained about it or its origin. It just works. And outside of the people who come into the store to buy it or complain about it, the only other people who know about it are the shop owners or the shopkeepers.
Yeah.
And it's just a very blasé thing. And it's like, oh yeah, this works. Yeah.
Well, and it's because also I think the way that, and this is a shout out to those prop masters that designed not only his mom designing the actual item, but the box itself. It gives that tin kazoo magic trick.
Yeah, very kitschy type of like those things that you go to like World Market and you end up buying.
Exactly. And it feels so old timey that you're like, oh, this is just cute. It feels like a tchotchke. And then I think that's what makes it so much more menacing, because this tchotchke not only works, but it does exactly what you want it to. And you're totally, it really does function in that MacGuffin spot. You're like, we don't know how it works, but it works. And that's it. Period. Hard stop. And you're like, well, what are the rules? We're like,
Who knows?
But yeah, the rules were on the box and we told you and you did. It's a very monkey paw situation in the most alluring and disarming clothes. And I think that is such a brilliant thing to put into a story where if you saw a monkey paw, like a straight up old, like a monkey paw, you'd be like, ooh, I seen a monkey paw. But what's so innocuous about a kid's toy that maybe could work, but might not really work?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure parents are like freaking out, like every time they go somewhere where they see that, and the kids are like, oh, can I get, no, don't touch that.
I want to make a wish. No, you're not.
No, you're not.
You only get the one and it's not happening.
This wish thing has a hotline. No.
Yeah. Yes. It had a hotline with Curry Barker, the director himself, actually being on the other side of that line, which was super fun.
And so brilliant too, with the way that that call finishes. I think this story did so much to address not only situations like with emotional manipulation, but the fact that the nice guys are always the ones who have put like, oh, I'm a nice guy. And in Bear's case, he's put Nikki on this pedestal who, when we first meet her, she's the girl next door. She's like the person you want to be friends with. She is living her life. She's loving who she is. She loves her friends. She has aspirations. She knows what she wants to do. She is human. She is a person. And he literally...
Which, real quick, before you continue the sentence, I do appreciate the fact that they make sure to spell out her, I guess, humanity, if you will, in all the different facets, whether if it's someone who may sometimes be a little selfish or may just want to see how a friendship moves forward, or maybe kind enough to give money to a, you know, homeless person, but also wants to party late. Like, they really try to stretch the gambit in understanding that this person is just a well-rounded, unique young adult.
Yeah, they gave Nikki, in a very short time span, they gave you a view into her life, which not only established her personhood, but her as a woman. And then the fact is that all of that is taken away immediately once the wish goes through. And even before that, Bear has put her into such a spot in his mind that she is an obtainable object. She's not herself.
Yeah.
And we watch that literally in real time as the spiral continues. Yeah. And it's what he wants. And it's like, it really comes down to at the heart of Bear, what did he actually want?
Yeah, I think that's the beauty of this story, is that you're not talking about because this movie is both very very psychological, but it's also at times very on the nose.
Yeah.
And it juggles both the film, like the expert film critic. And it panders to both the expert film critic and the person who's just going to a movie.
Who brought their girlfriend to the movie.
Yeah. we got to talk about that too as well. But I love the fact that this movie makes several attempts to help you recognize there is a vast difference between a romance. What is the line?
Oh, Nikki is writing a story, and she says there's a difference between a love story and a romance.
And he's like, aren't they the same thing? And it leaves it there.
Yeah.
And it ultimately,
she goes, she looks at him and gives him the dirtiest look and is like, no.
But there's no answer to it. Like, she doesn't really say anything.
Because the movie itself wants
its viewer to come to its own conclusion without giving it to them based off of everything they're about to see.
Yes.
Which is very intelligent, very smart, and honestly a little cheeky of the filmmaker to create this division within moviegoers, to have some people say, yeah, every love story is a romance. Oh, that's definitely what it's about. And then the people who are like, no, there's the people who know those types of situations and those types of moments and how there is a vast difference. And I love that about this movie. I love how, again, at times you see the road signs on the direction that this director is trying to lead you. And it's not like an in your face, like, by the way, we're going to do this. So just so you know, blah, blah, like a huge sign in front of the movie theater, like, he's about to do this, just preparing you for this, just so you know. It's literally, hey, next turn in 5 miles. Cool. What's the turn? He's not saying, but something's gonna happen. It's on its way. Or exit up here. Like it's little inconsequential signs that let you know there is a roadmap that is being followed. And I appreciate the heck out of that, because it doesn't dumb down the story. It doesn't water down the experience, nor does it insult the intelligence of the audience or the moviegoers. It is absolutely giving you a method of storytelling that, quite honestly, Curry Barker has excelled in doing. If this is indicative of everything else he's going to be putting out, I am 100% excited for whatever else he's going to create. Because
you should see The Chair. Spencer and I were able to watch that one.
Yeah.
Like, it is very, again, another one that's very well written and very unexpected.
Yeah, very, like, only 25 minutes, and it's on YouTube, so feel free to check it out. But yeah, that also had like the vibe of like, oh, this guy has ideas and it's going places. Mm-hmm. I really liked it.
Mm-hmm. And I love the transition that we have of recognizing that particular question that's posed, and we see the answer to what both sides of that coin would say in the next like 5-10 minutes of that film, because you realize, as Amy so aptly put, that it isn't love that he wants from Nikki, but he wants something else that he doesn't exactly know. And it's based out of, mind you, he's not so much a creep. He's not so much a creep, but somebody who doesn't know how to approach people.
Oh, no, 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 no.
It's exactly that.
No, no. This is where we're going to divert real hard.
Okay. Explain.
Also being, you know, the female presenting person. And
being from the other side of that gender. Let me just lay this out. The thought process is that obviously at the beginning, there's a very unique conversation that happens. And yes, it is cringeworthy. It's not just cringe.
It is
red flags. Yeah. It is not cringe. Again, cringe is like, oh, that's cute, but so embarrassing. Oh. No, this is bro. No. Hard X.
Again, based off of a lack of experience for people. Yes, but you also have the influence of other people that are around them that tell them, oh, this is how you should do, or this is what you do. People can be misinformed. We see that every day. And in my personal opinion, this is somebody who couples inexperience with misinformation. And it results in this. Out of desperation, he doesn't have any true answers, so this is what he resorts to. Now, mind you, am I stating that his actions are right? No, I'm not stating that. I'm not stating that whatever happens from that point moving forward was okay. I'm not stating any of that. I am stating that the person before the decision was made merely indicates that out of inexperience and misinformation and ill advice, this can easily be any person outside of this house.
So in establishing, I hear you.
Mm-hmm.
I give you the space. And this is where I love you, but you're wrong. So this is not inexperience. This is 7 years of this person pining after a person who was a good person,
mm-hmm.
who chose never to take the leap all of those 7 years, who is now deciding to offload all of his emotional feelings onto her, which is unwarranted.
Out of what experience does he knows? Like, again,
that is not her responsibility.
I'm not saying it's her responsibility. All I'm stating is that this is a situation where, out of the lack of experience and sound advice, people are prone to making bad decisions.
This person, this character, literally decided that he was going to profess his love
mm-hmm.
for her after 7 years and give a litany of excuses as to the reasons why he's been in love with her for so long. I mean,
which all indicate that there is something. It just hasn't come to any kind of fruition. As far as there's,
Spencer, I love your face right now while you're trying to.
Oh, okay. So let's talk about this diner scene, because
it's literally the very first thing.
Yeah.
And like, when he was saying these things, I was like, this doesn't seem to make sense, even based on what little I know about your situation.
Yeah.
Because like, he's like, oh, she was the only one there for me when my grandmother died and blah, blah, blah. And that one incident seemed to have happened relatively recently-ish.
Yep.
Because it just seems like he just moved into this place and she hasn't even been over. But like, he has two other friends that seem to be there all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like they're not new. So it also seems like he might just be like hyper focusing on this woman.
Yes.
Like, listening to him reminded me of some other people who are like, this seems like a really weird situation you're in, and I don't think it's cool. And like, he kind of brings up that kind of vibe to me. So I feel like he's a bad dude. He just doesn't realize it.
He's a, air quotes, nice guy. And yeah. Before he hits the, you know, you were the only one that was there when my grandmother died, he drops the line that every girl that has just been friends with a guy does not want to hear, which is, you were the first one that befriended me when I moved to town.
Okay, I can agree.
That was the first line. And my body literally was like, oh God,
so,
this is abort.
So I okay. hear what you're saying, and I agree wholeheartedly.
I would again, love a girl to come up to you and do that.
Again, here's the thing. I hear you, and I agree as to the cringeworthiness and the ill approach. It is cringe.
No. Like, this monologue that he's doing where he's professing his loves at the diner, he is testing it out on somebody else.
Yeah. Okay. Very specifically, a waitress who was on break. Like, that alone.
Who got talked into it.
Yeah, that alone just is based off of
ill advice from the friend that is there.
No.
Yeah.
That he practices, because the friend wanted to make sure, one, that the group didn't fall apart, but two, that if he's going to put his foot in his mouth, at least try to buy somebody.
This is really interesting that, like, for the sake of between you and I, Amy, you tend to be more of the there's still good in people and blah, blah, blah. I have tried to see that part in people, and apparently it's thrown back in my face in this particular moment, which is fine, because it's not, again, I am looking at it from the perspective of there are, I mean, you look at our particular past with the church culture. There are thousands of people who actually hit the age of 18 and leave that and have no idea how to handle the outside world. Sure. And they make the most horrific decisions based off of A, what they've seen on TV or movies, B, what their newfound friends tell them is the best idea, or C, based off of the little information that they do know about social constructs. And I've seen it. You have seen it, Spencer. I know you've seen it. Amy, apparently, maybe you've seen it within that realm of that particular mm-hmm. scope of people. But the fact is, they exist. Now, I'm not saying that that's the explanation here. I am saying, from a standpoint of not knowing the rest of the film, that first maybe 10, 15 minutes doesn't establish in my opinion, a full-on creep. It establishes somebody who is misguided by the people he chooses around him and those that he is enamored with. Like, he doesn't have, like, out of his entire friend group, he's got one guy that is constantly there who makes all the wrong choices and is an absolute jerk in the group, because you come to find out that he is actually sleeping with the girl he has actually been sleeping with the girl that he has had a crush on all these years and doesn't tell him. Don't you think somebody like that would give ill advice? And B, he's probably never had the actual opportunity to speak to a woman in this particular way. Now, again, I am not saying that this all establishes that, oh, well, then he's just a misguided poor soul throughout the movie. No, I am saying the benefit of the doubt is that in the beginning of this movie, he is absolutely misguided by a jerk and doesn't really know how to go about expressing how he feels. That's it.
I appreciate that you are trying to look at the bright side and give people a chance.
Apparently I shouldn't anymore.
In this regard, when is the woman's responsibility to cater to the feelings?
Never.
And so then he's in the wrong from the jump.
Yeah, but
you had prefaced that he's inexperienced. He doesn't know how to talk to women or share his feelings. Later on, he has a full interaction with Megan Lawless, with Sarah, that is totally chill and totally normal. So that tells me that he is not only capable, whatever has been stopping him, whether if I wanted to give leeway to, you know, ill-advised because his friend is boning the girl that he likes and he doesn't want to tell him. The fact is that for 7 years, this guy has been harboring, air quotes, a secret that he likes her. She knows. She's known. And she's either waiting for him to do something or, like, ignoring it in the hopes that he gets over it and it goes away.
I couldn't really figure out what, like, because, like, exactly. There's a certain point where it's like, she does know, and
she's always known.
I couldn't figure out where she was, like, lining up for that, you know?
And a lot of it, too, I mean, again, based on without having prior information, it seems like at points in time, like, she's given the opportunity for him to say something about it.
He doesn't.
Out of fear, out of the lack of confidence, out of whatever creep juice, I don't know, like, but the fact is that he doesn't, because we don't know.
And so that gives him the right to enslave her.
No, that's not what I said at all.
I know, but in his mind,
that's why I'm saying at that point in time, up until that moment, I can safely come to a general consensus that may be a potential understanding of that person up until that point. And then it's at that point that he transitions from someone who is enamored with a person to someone who is enamored with an idea.
He was enamored with an idea from the jump. That was the thing where he looked at everything that she was and he's just like, gosh, you know, it's just. And the way initially before the snap, before everything, he uses her name as a placeholder for all of the things that make her good, but fails to see who she is. Because if he did, he would have recognized that she maybe liked him as a brother, maybe, which is a whole other beast, liked him as a brother, liked him as a friend. But the fact is she kept giving him, hey, tell me. So his lack of and failure to communicate is no longer hers to bear.
It never was.
Exactly. So this entire concept, I'm gonna state this now so it's on the table. He is the villain of this entire thing.
Oh, no, yeah. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yay,
he is definitely the villain.
There's a consensus.
However, just what all I am saying is there is a pivot in this story that occurs and is a very hard pivot for the entire movie. And it is in that moment, the big moment, the wish moment, where he ultimately transitions from being someone who may be trying to figure out his own feelings and emotions to someone wanting a quick and easy answer.
Well, he always wanted a quick and easy answer.
No, he didn't.
He never did the work.
Exactly.
Which he wanted a quick and easy answer. And when he got his answer that he wanted, which is very interesting for us even to see when the wish triggers, that he has that entire moment where he's like, is this real? And like, we're like, oh, so you know that this isn't normal, that this shouldn't be a good thing. And then he decides that he's going to let himself have this because it's what he's always wanted for so long. And again, he completely skirts around the fact that Nikki is a person. It's all just, this is a whole thing about emotional manipulation.
No, I know. Again, you do. from the perspective of story building, you are, there's no, you know what? It's funny because oddly enough, there are situations that Amy, you have experienced in the last year or so with other people who have exhibited that, but you wouldn't say that about them. And so it's unique.
Because they're in person.
Yeah. But so it's funny how you can come to that conclusion about this, but it's fine. Like it's a different beast.
But you find it funny.
No, it's okay, a little.
It's a similar beast, but one's standing in front of me and the other one's on the screen. So I can handle the one that's on the screen.
Spencer. It just, again, the dichotomy of who you are presenting yourself now within your thought process versus who you are probably once we get off air when it comes to this thought and this structure is a little disingenuous. But it is, it if that's who you want to present yourself as.
Disingenuous.
It is, if I'm being completely honest.
My perception of a movie is wholly different.
Your perception of a person.
In a movie.
That,
which is a character.
Yes.
That I am not. Ooh, this is off air. Beep, 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 beep. We're playing the off air music.
I'm just
going to pick this up when we're off air. Unfortunately, no. That's me not going on a tangent. So
I'm just saying.
Don't poke this bear.
Either way, it's a very unique character makeup that Curry Barker creates within 100%. Both characters.
Yes.
And honestly, it is definitely talking points that he is allowed to build up as the movie progresses for each character's journey. Yeah. And then obviously as we come to certain points, like I do want to highlight, I'm surprised it's not something that you had mentioned previous, but I do want to mention the composer of this particular film.
I only heard half the score. I was,
it's
very good score.
Yeah. From what
no, it is really good. In fact, the entire soundtrack is just a vibe. It is definitely
it's
100%
your vibe. You do like some synth.
Yeah,
it's great.
It's too, awesome. Yeah. Again, I'm just getting targeted here.
No,
like, right.
Either that way, was not
anyway,
a bad target.
So just the fact is like the soundtrack actually really does do a great job setting everything. Like it almost felt like it was starting out as Lisa Frankenstein to a certain extent, but the environment and the situations that were happening were vastly different. And I really appreciated it. Did you get a chance to listen to any of it after the fact?
No, because I remember like in the theater, you asked me about the soundtrack.
Yeah.
And I just looked at you and I'm like,
there was a soundtrack?
Like, yeah. In the back of my brain, it was like some part was like looking for a paper. So I was like, I know it's here somewhere. I heard it at one point, but now I can't write it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was actually really good.
If I can chime in on the soundtrack. So I think, oh, wow, thanks. What I was going to say.
Careful,
is
I might tell you you're wrong about it. And just
oh, my gosh.
What I was saying is the way that it was utilized in the entire film gave these moments where it was very reminiscent of like 80s teenage movies where it's like, this is supposed to be romantic. And you're like, this is in total justice.
Which, mind you, all those 80s movies has this entire character makeup through most of it. And yet now we're looking back at it. And it's like,
no,
oh,
a lot
just
of those were bad, too, though.
Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Ducky.
Yeah,
you didn't say I was wrong.
No, I'm just. Yeah.
No, the soundtrack was great. Yeah. And it not only highlighted, but it pinpointed moments where it makes it better and worse simultaneously because the score is gorgeous. It is literally where in a couple of the scenes you're like, why are you playing that right now with this happen? No, this is not the right spot for this. So yeah.
Let's talk highlights and issues. Start with Spencer.
Highlights. Tension building. Like, this movie.
Said that like it was about to give an essay in college or something. MLA format.
Oh, gosh, don't remind me of that. Okay. This movie does such a good job with just, like, tension building and scenes. Mm-hmm. That they're, like, at one point, like, you know, he's just lying in bed and it's all quiet. And then a phone rings. It's not even that loud, but it gave me such a dang jump scare because, like, yeah, because, like she's there and you're just, like, waiting for her to pop off because you know that's coming. Like, throughout the movie, this movie does a fantastic job with, like, just the tension and world building it's doing. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate it and also hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any issues or just the highlight?
I just want to do a highlight right now.
Okay. Okay. What about you, Ames?
Highlight, really, I think the cinematography and the way these takes were done, especially for some of these shots, especially, I have never been so freaked out by someone just being backlit and the front of them is dark and they're talking softly and you're like, oh, this is really, again, I'm not a big horror person and I know it's probably in other places, but for me, it carried just enough like, and I know it was chosen that way, but also when there were different shots and the way that they were, I almost said posed and that's wrong, staged, like where they had them, like the leaning, she's leaning through the window talking to him at one point, and then she's like farther back, and then she's farther forward, and then she's like popping out from the side, and she's having these conversations, Nikki, with Bear, and you're like, what's going on? And it just progresses and progresses and progresses. And you get to moments where the use of levels and the way the shots are built have a closeness and a personalness to them that makes it feel more as though we were invited in and we're sharing this. And this is, instead of like, oh, we're seeing it from like far on the outside and this is happening to people, it feels a lot more closer and connected. So that was cool.
I do have to agree with the cinematography. I feel like the compositions of all the shots were meant to mislead as far as where the trajectory of the scene is going. And it really kind of sets you up with this mentality of like, you can't really trust what you know about movies or filmmaking in order for you to navigate yourself through this movie. It definitely was a big high point for this particular film as far as the cinematography. Going back to another highlight, obviously Indy Navarrete did a phenomenal job as far as her physical performance, as well as her vocal performance in this movie, just her ability to show range in the ways that this movie requires just was absolutely masterclass, and especially for this being her first leading role, even more so. One of the things, and I don't know if it's a highlight or an issue that I did want to mention, which technically isn't really about the movie itself, but as far as its impact, was the indication as to whether or not you should bring a significant other to this movie.
Oh, it was amazing.
Because there's not really an indicator as to who you should bring to this movie. But if your partner is more of the, I guess, aggressive or combative side more times than most, chances are you don't want to bring her to this movie.
Or him.
You don't want to bring them to this movie.
Yep.
Because quite honestly, it will trigger them.
More often than not, at really odd places where you think it's innocuous and it's not.
Yeah. Amy got triggered a couple times, actually.
I just looked over at Eddie and I was like, that's not, I'm not that bad. And then I had to explain myself afterwards outside.
No, there was no explanation because it was true. But no, there was a couple. So we sat in the theater and we sat through all the credits just talking and everybody, while Amy and Spencer were kind of talking to themselves, I was actually doing a little bit more focusing on the people that were getting up. And mind you, there was a couple people who you could, throughout the movie, you were like, shh, or oh my gosh, or like, that were responding to certain things, but as you were seeing people walk up, you kind of got the vibe as to how the experience was for them. And for some people, there was like, oh, that was interesting. That was really cool. Or, you know, that was something, blah, blah, blah. And then there were the couples who were getting up where one of the partners was like, what the heck was that? Oh my God, did you let, oh my gosh, did you bring this movie to say, bring me to this movie to say something or whatever? Mm-hmm. By the end of the movie, as the final credits were rolling, there was a couple that was sitting right in front of us and they got up, they stood up, and the woman did not look happy. The guy looked like he had a blast. He was smiling, looked like he had just been laughing. And she leans over at him and she says something to the degree of, don't you ever bring me to movies like this again. And I'm like, and mind you, she says it quietly enough to where
it's not supposed to be heard.
It's not supposed to be heard, but we were the only people in the theater. And so I had Roger and Ebert next to me that were going on and on, you know, these two. And so I couldn't hear it fully, but.
Oh, whatever.
but the fact is like, I saw it like with her, or like with her mouth the words, and I'm like, oh, and I just kind of take it upon myself to speak out loud and be like, oh yeah, definitely don't want to bring this, yeah, bring someone to this movie who may be triggered by, you know, the events of this movie. And, mm-hmm. and I think, I believe he heard me and he started laughing a little bit to himself, and she got more upset and started walking further ahead of him. And I said something else snippy as they were turning the corner, and I could hear him laugh out loud.
Oh my gosh. You're such a menace in that theater. And I did not catch any of that.
Yeah, it was great. And I'm like, yep, this movie is definitely going to weed out those who probably shouldn't be in a relationship with anyone else other than themselves.
Yep.
So... But yeah, that does bring us to our roundtable question of the evening, and that is, what separates a compelling psychological thriller from a frustrating one?
Oh.
And where do you think Obsession lands on that spectrum? Now, obviously, we are talking about a movie that really leans into an area where it could trigger people, it could frustrate people based off of decisions. Obviously, the two of you had a heyday with this beginning part, and you guys were willing to argue it to the nth degree.
Oh, I'm willing to argue lots of things. But
the fact is that, you know, it there was no story to base it off of other than just what you were seeing in that instance. Now, for some, they could get really frustrated and have a sentiment on it based on that and get frustrated with it throughout the rest of the movie. I'm not saying you two. Spencer's looking like, how dare you?
No.
I'm just saying, like, people can have a certain sentiment and get frustrated, triggered, angered, even frustrated with the character's choices.
Frustrated from the jump, and it carries all the way. It's that great first 30 minutes and the rest of it sucks.
Yeah. Versus just a compelling psychological thriller / horror movie that, like we stated, really has you kind of along for the ride and gives slight indications as to the trajectory. Where do you, like, what do you think separates those two types of movies?
What?
I got you. Okay. So we've got compelling psychological thrillers mm-hmm. / horror and frustrating ones, like frustrating horror / psychological. And where does Obsession fall in this? So my thing is, and because I'm continuing to learn, mm-hmm. it is how it is the characters and the story are treated.
Mm.
So when it comes to this thing, I was more able to handle this than a regular horror because there wasn't a million jump scares. They were used very timely and in spots where all it did was to continue to accent the tension and the conflict within the story in and of itself. It kept moving forward, which made it more compelling. Now, if you like, and I hate to say this, but sometimes when you get to psychological ones and you're like, oh, it's got to be, you know, the nurse, or it's got to be the maid, or whatever, even when you're talking about a mystery, it's cheap, fast ways out versus something that makes you kind of think about it and somebody caring about the story and the characters versus just being like, oh yeah, it's going to be the nurse and the maid. And we told you at the beginning and you weren't paying attention, but surprise, it still is. So for me, I have Obsession higher on the, again, I have not seen a lot, but higher on the list for compelling psychological horror, because this one even though I had an idea of what the outcome or what the main portion of the story was going to be, I didn't expect the outcome to be what it was. Yeah. And it was really thoughtful and well done. And you could tell that Barker cares not only about his characters, but his actors and how they gave breath to these people.
Interestingly enough.
Any help on that, Spence?
Well, here's the thing. So interestingly enough, the Reddit question that we talked about kind of ties into this a little bit. Because if you look at the difference between like what is a compelling psychological thriller versus something that is frustrating, take for instance, what was the movie that you had said, Hancock?
Yeah.
So from an action standpoint, the movie gets kind of frustrating because it doesn't really fulfill its intended purpose midway through. It could be bigger, it could be better, it could be bolder, but it isn't. Like if you look at it from a standpoint of, say, horror, you look at movies like what is a great like the It movies. Mm-hmm. The It movies create this sense of dread and fear that really drive the story, and it absolutely encapsulates probably some of Stephen King's best works. And then we look at something like Maximum Overdrive.
Yay!
Which is still kind of in that wheelhouse, but it doesn't really actually live to any kind of potential because it's just a bad movie. The frustrating, it looks like you're still stuck. Okay. So like if you're looking at within the compelling psychological side of it, the psychological thriller.
Okay.
Like a great psychological thriller for me would be like a movie like, did you ever see Identity?
No. Okay. Wait, is that the one with John Cusack?
John Cusack.
Oh, yeah, at the hotel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like there's a level of like psychological thriller that really kind of, it keeps you guessing.
Right.
It literally has a countdown with, you know, room keys as you continue through the movie. That's a great movie that paces its psychological thriller aspect and story. For me, a frustrating one, and I don't know if either of you saw this, it is, oh my God, it is a movie with Matthew McConaughey, oddly enough, and Anne Hathaway. It is a movie called Serenity. Serenity is a movie about a man who owns a boat, and his ex-wife, and he's like a fisherman, and his ex-wife ends up coming back into his life and ultimately posits to him that she will give him X amount of money if he takes her and her husband, her current husband, out on a boat trip, and they both dispatch and dispose of the body of her then husband.
Okay.
The catch is that this is essentially a Sims game.
What?
For a kid who is dealing with, I believe, the divorce of his parents.
So in other words, it did like a Dallas or whatever it was. Yeah, like where it was like they're all in a snow globe.
No, that's St. Elmo's.
No,
something.
Not St. Elmo's Fire. That's an 80s movie. No,
what? It's no, the hospital one.
Yeah.
It's a hospital
one. I heard that same thing about that. Oh, yeah. You're right. I know what you're
because technically there's a theory that particular series actually connects all these other series together in the same universe.
Saint Elsewhere. You're right.
Saint Elsewhere. I was close.
Yeah.
But no. So ultimately it turns into this whole thing where like the consequences of these particular people don't really matter because they're just characters in a game that this kid is building out.
Still, that really sucks.
Yeah. So like that's frustrating because you're like, what the heck? So with that in mind, based off of like frustrating psychological thriller movies that you have seen and then really compelling ones, really good ones, where do you think, number one, what do you think is the biggest difference between those two? And secondly, where do you think Obsession ranks on this?
Okay. I cannot think of a single movie that I've seen that's even like that Sims ideology thing that you put out there. That sounds awful.
but there are movies out there like that. Obviously, I just gave you one. Like again,
but I haven't seen it. I feel like the real problem is I probably haven't seen.
Did you see Source Code?
No.
With
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Oh my God, that is a frustrating movie. Knowing is a frustrating movie. The one with Nicolas Cage. That is a frustrating action movie. For all that to happen, only for it to get to a point to where, oh, we're just going to go back to the day after we met and I'm just going to, you know, go back because I can go as versus far as paycheck. I need to. Or I mean, I think if you're looking at both like time type of movies like that, I think Paycheck does a better job than Knowing. But in that scale, like there has to be something that you may have seen, even in the sense of your B movie brain, like that's like this.
Okay, but I come at those movies from a very different place than you do.
Apparently.
Because like they don't get put into like, this is bad. This gets put,
this is like a steel trap. It doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it's like awesome.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It stays in my mind forever. And so it's like always, that's why I can always kind of bring things to recollection when it comes to moments like that.
Yeah, because like when you're mentioning Maximum Overdrive, I'm like, yeah, that movie kicks ass, and there is no bad notes for that movie.
There's a ton of bad notes.
No. It's hilarious.
But was it scary?
No. Was it supposed to be?
Yes. Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, yeah, it was.
The whole concept for Stephen King, and the reason he set it up, is most of Stephen King's work has some type of tension or story building that ties to a bigger universe with a mystery and other people. And it has, and mind you, again, I'm learning this all because Eddie is curating things so that I can watch it, but it's supposed to be horror-esque, mystery, psychological that way. And Maximum Overdrive is supposed to be like,
Or even on the flip side, Cellular.
Oh, Lord.
Do you remember The Cell?
No.
Cell.
The Cell. Cell.
Cell.
The one with
John Cusack.
That's supposed to be a horror movie that you're supposed to see and be like,
Jennifer Lopez.
No, that was the... No. You do what I
Here
did.
We go again.
The phone call.
The phone call the one with John Cusack again and Samuel L. Jackson. We talked about this last year.
They're circling the...
They're literally all turning into like zombies or whatever because of the cell phone. Signal.
Yeah, okay.
I love that you picked
Yeah, well, it sounds like I have to do a lot more reminding, J-Lo. Apparently.
No, see,
but it's things that he didn't like that you checked.
Yeah,
I don't get that. That's not fair. Like, how are you able to do that? I can't let go of anything because it's always in my mind.
No, sorry. Okay, so it seems like the real problem is my brain is like...
Retention. Retention is the real problem.
I'm going to throw it out for you, and it's gone. Okay.
So I got to keep reminding him then is what I'm hearing. No,
that sounds even worse.
It sounds great.
Okay, yeah.
Share the wealth, I say.
This movie, to, I guess, answer your question, is on the good side. Like, it doesn't have any of those... Like... Yeah, there's unanswered questions, but you don't really need answers to those questions. Mm. I don't need to know how the wish works, which is actually kind of amazing because I'm really into details and rules stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
I super want to know how the heck that whole hotline thing works where he's just like, oh, you want to talk to Nikki? Let me pull her up. I'm like, how? Who are you? You're like the secondary villain of this movie because this...
Because you're the wish man.
And I think that's like, I think... encapsulating the truest identity of what a MacGuffin is, this like thing could easily be whatever's in the briefcase in Pulp Fiction because we have no idea what it is, how it works, or why it's so valuable.
Yeah.
At the same time, it is also accessible, talked about, and absolutely has repercussions that other people have experienced. Mm. But nobody knows. And it's like this microcosm that's caused by this, the impact of this small... inconsequential world market looking kitschy thing,
which I think was such a great like throwaway too when we're talking about it with the when he asks does this work and she's like yeah it works it's mad like the person that's selling she was like yeah it's magic but she goes but you can't be one of those guys that comes in and complains and he's like but it works she's like yeah it works it doesn't work like whatever. And she plays it and she plays it so nonchalantly that you're like this is literally what someone would say to you.
Yeah.
And you don't even recognize the fact that people have been coming in and have been complaining about it working too well or working and it's not what they want.
Mm.
And she has to stand there and get them coming in. She's like, you got to promise you're not going to do that, man. And you're just like, what? Yeah. What? Ugh, so good.
Yeah. Well, wrapping this whole thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amy.
This film passes for me. It's not just a beginning, middle, or end. This is a thought-provoking as well as conversation-starting story that not only cares about its characters, it leads you into a place where you choose to sympathize with one or the other character or some of those characters, and it really says a lot about you as a person.
Thanks. Wow. Okay.
No, it's not... It's not a bad thing. It also
of this episode. Hold on. Okay. Now you're okay. Not only are you hypocritical in your beliefs and the way you stated earlier, but now you're hypocritical in how you're reviewing this movie.
No, I'm not.
You are a triple hypocrite in this
a
one.
A triplicate?
You are a triplicate and you need to be you need to be vanquished.
Oh, thanks. Thanks.
Let me go get my one wish willow real quick.
Oh my gosh. No. really the other question that's brought up in the beginning of the movie, what's the difference between a romance and a love story, does reach a conclusion, and the question really becomes how you interpret it. I actually really enjoyed this, and it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be, and it wasn't as grossed out as I thought it was going to be either when it comes to horror. So for this
which guy, is saying a lot, because it was actually pretty gory.
Yeah. It's some pretty like
especially
moments.
At some parts.
Yeah.
It was
and
it
for
was
me
pretty
I
heavy.
Was like, the story carried it, where I was like, this is part, it was violence for story's sake and not violence for violence sake.
Yeah.
So for this, I actually giving this a 4.7 out of 5 monocles. And if this is what's on the docket for more horror coming out this year, I am both hopeful and really uncomfortable.
Spencer.
This movie passes very easily. There is just a lot to like in this movie, from just like, you know, acting and sound and just directing and cinematography and the overall story.
Yeah.
I mean, there is not much. It takes a lot for me to be blown away.
Yeah.
Like, and just like kind of stuck, especially like once the credits are rolling, I was just like I had been through stuff and I came throughout changed on the other side. Like, that was this movie and my journey with it.
It moved me, Bob.
So I can think of no higher praise than giving it 5 out of 5. Like, it's definitely worth seeing.
Yeah,
I agree. The movie passes for me as well, and it definitely is one of those particular experiences where I think I said it at the end of the film when we saw it, is that like the great thing about this movie is it doesn't need prequel, a sequel, or any other information. It is a fully encapsulated story, and it definitely gives the viewers something to latch onto as you go through the journey. I definitely am hoping that as Curry Barker sees immense success with this movie, that we get a chance to see more movies from them, and obviously see more opportunities for him to stretch his horror elements. And
He was just announced as the director for the next installment of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of April.
There you go. So as far as my experience with this movie, I absolutely had a great time, and I am going to also give this a 5 out of 5. I definitely am like advising anybody that I know that are looking to see good horror movies as of late to go see this movie. And if you haven't had a chance to check it out, go check your local listings in your theaters and see when this movie, if this movie is still playing and where to see it, because you're definitely going to want to catch it in theaters. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over at our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills, and chills. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosopherspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Lossopers, and give us a like or subscribe. Listen in. What did you think of Obsession? Did you like the movie? Did you not like the movie? Did you have, you know, any second thoughts about it? Did you bring somebody that you weren't supposed to? Let us know your thoughts in the towels section. We love reading those, and we definitely will be going back through and checking them out. And of course, if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We have earned it.
We have.
Yes, please.
Go also and check us out over on the socials at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Over at Instagram is where we post all of our great hijinks on all of our platforms now. But if you're looking for extra content such as Spencer's Big Score, which he's got to come back to do that sometime soon, and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever looked, which is at Jane on Scene on Instagram and Instagram only. And if you're going, Amy, listen, we're following that. Nothing showing up. I'm trying. These people picked a really bad movie for streaming as for lovers.
Don't blame us for trying to tip the scale.
Same mentality about this movie.
It's going to be Love Actually, y'all. Love Actually 0.2.
Well, also check us out over at Blue Sky at Filmlosspers podcast.social. We are so glad that you're able to join us tonight, and we do hope that you come next week as we have another great movie review for you. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosspers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm managing intern manager Amy.
Class dismissed.
I'm still right.